Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Coca-Cola FEMSA second quarter 2011 earnings results conference call. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded, and all participants are in listen-only mode. At the request of the company, we'll open the conference up for questions and answers after the presentation. During this conference call, management may discuss certain forward-looking statements concerning Coca-Cola FEMSA's future performance and should be considered as good faith estimates made by the company. These forward-looking statements reflect management expectations and are based upon currently available data. Actual results are subject to future events and uncertainties, which can materially impact the company's actual performance. At this time, I will now turn the conference over to Mr. Hector Treviño, Coca-Cola FEMSA's CFO. Go ahead, Mr. Treviño.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. During the second quarter of 2011, our portfolio of franchise territories across Latin America delivered strong results, achieving double-digit top and bottom-line growth. The main drivers of our performance for the quarter were the volume growth generated by our operations in Mexico, Colombia, and Argentina, and our pricing initiatives implemented in our multi-category portfolio approach over the past several months across all of our territories. In the second quarter, our consolidated revenues reached more than 28 billion pesos, up 13% from the second quarter of 2010. On a currency-neutral basis, our consolidated total revenues grew 14% for the quarter. In the second quarter, our consolidated sales volume grew 5%, mainly driven by the popularity of brand Coca-Cola, which grew 4%, supported by strong volumes recorded in Mexico, Colombia, Central America, and Argentina, and the double-digit volume growth of our still beverage portfolio. This volume growth primarily resulted from the Jugos del Valle line of products in Mexico and Brazil, coupled with the strong performance of Nestea and Powerade in Mexico and Cepita in Argentina. Our consolidated gross profit increased 12%. Cost of goods sold grew mainly as a result of higher PET resin and sweetener costs across our territories. This increase was partially offset by the appreciation of our main operations' local currencies as applied to our U.S. dollar-denominated raw material costs. Consequently, our consolidated gross margin declined 30 basis points compared with the second quarter of 2010. Our consolidated operating income improved 12%, reaching 4.6 billion pesos in the second quarter, supported by double-digit operating income growth achieved in our Mexico and Mercosur divisions. Operating leverage achieved through higher revenues allowed us to compensate for gross margin pressures and higher labor costs recorded in Venezuela and Mercosur, as well as higher freight costs in Argentina. As a result, our consolidated operating margin remained flat at 16.2%. On a currency-neutral basis, our consolidated operating income grew approximately 13%. Our consolidated EBITDA increased by 14% to 5.7 billion pesos in the second quarter, and our net controlling interest income reached 2.6 billion pesos, an increase of 6%. Now, let me expand on the performance of our operations. Our Mexican operations delivered double-digit top-line growth in the second quarter of 2011, successfully building on the solid results we posted in the second quarter of last year. During the quarter, the sparkling beverage category significantly contributed to our incremental volumes, mainly driven by the 7% volume growth of brand Coca-Cola in most of our presentations, combined with 5% volume growth in flavored sparkling beverages. Our still beverage category posted mid-single-digit volume growth, supported by the Jugo del Valle line of products, as well as the performance of Nestí and Powerade. Additionally, the volumes from our water portfolio, including bulk water, grew 7%, supported by double-digit volume growth in our personal package offerings. Thanks to our operators' focus on designing tailored portfolio alternatives that target a differentiated base of consumers, we saw balanced growth among all of our sales channels during the quarter. Our average price per unit case increased 3.9% in the second quarter. This increase was mainly driven by the selective price increases we have implemented over the past several months, specifically on our sparkling and still beverage portfolio during the quarter, and also by high volumes of brand Coca-Cola, which carries a higher average price per unit case. As a result of our increased volumes and prices, our Mexican operations total revenues grew 11%, reaching 11.8 billion pesos. With regard to our profitability, higher PET resin costs were offset by the appreciation of the Mexican peso as applied to our U.S. dollar-denominated raw material costs, coupled with a more favorable sweetener cost environment. Compared with the second quarter of 2010, our gross profit increased by 11% to 5.9 billion Mexican pesos, and our gross margin improved 20 basis points, reaching 49.7%. Our operating income grew 19% to 2.3 billion Mexican pesos. Operating leverage achieved through higher revenues combined with tightly controlled operating expenses and more efficient marketing investment initiatives allow us to expand our operating margin by 130 basis points to 19.7%. The profitability we attained at the operating level translated into EBITDA growth of 16% to 2.8 billion Mexican pesos compared with the same quarter of last year. In summary, our Mexico division successfully continued on its path of growth, delivering solid results. During the quarter, we experienced growth in our single-serve portfolio, which may imply a more tangible economic recovery for our consumers. We believe we have undertaken the right initiatives in the marketplace over the past year to provide our wide multi-category portfolio of products and presentations to a broader base of consumers. To this end, we invested significant resources across our Mexico division to enhance our execution at the point of sale, bolster our returnable base, improve our cooler coverage, and enhance our growing still beverage platform, and support our flavor sparkling beverage category. Thanks to our implementation of these initiatives and our operators' focus on addressing our consumers' needs through our refined segmentation strategies, our portfolio continues to gain market share across most of our beverage categories. Despite the important brand recognition we have enjoyed over the years, we constantly challenge ourselves to stay ahead of the curve, to reinforce our position at the forefront of those categories in which we live, and to improve our position in those categories in which we do not. Clear examples of these efforts are Nestí and Powerade, brands we jointly developed and supported over the years together with our Coca-Cola company. In the case of Nestí, it now enjoys a leadership position across our Mexican territories. With respect to Powerade, our isotonic brand, we work to better understand the drivers of the category, to further develop it, and to achieve a higher market position. As a result, during the year, we continue to gain market share. Now, let's turn our attention to our Latin Centro division. Our Latin Centro division recorded 3% volume growth in the second quarter, This increase was driven by the strong performance of our Colombian and Central American franchise territories, which recorded 10% and 8% volume growth respectively, and compensated for a 9% volume decline in Venezuela. In Colombia, our volume grew 10% during the quarter, mainly driven by the strong performance of brand Coca-Cola in multi-serve presentations. After the severe weather conditions that prevailed over the past 12 months, we have seen a gradual recovery of our volumes in this franchise territory. In Venezuela, our volume decreased 9%, primarily resulting from lower sparkling beverage volumes. During the year, we have observed a more cautious consumer spending environment, mainly driven by increased consumer goods and services prices. Additionally, over the past 3 months, we have experienced adverse weather conditions that further affected consumption. However, our operators continue to evaluate strategies to address our consumers' needs, providing more affordable packaging alternatives, and implementing innovative options in the still beverage category to foster consumption. Our Central American operations sales volume grew significantly. This growth was mainly driven by brand Coca-Cola in both single and multi-serve presentations across our franchise territories and our still beverage portfolio in Nicaragua, which was fueled by the Jugo del Valle line of products. Our Latin Central division's total revenues grew 11% to 8.2 billion Mexican pesos. This increase primarily resulted from the volume growth in our Colombian and Central American franchises and the implementation of selective price increases in Venezuela over the past 12 months. On a currency neutral basis, our Latin Central division's total revenues grew 15%. With regard to our profitability, our Latin Central division's gross profit grew 10% to 3.8 billion Mexican pesos. Higher PET and sweetener costs across the division were partially offset by the effect of the appreciation of the Colombian pesos as applied to our U.S. dollar denominated raw material costs. Compared with the second quarter of 2010, our gross margin declined 60 basis points to 49.9%. Our operating profit declined 1% to 1.2 billion Mexican pesos. Operating leverage achieved through higher revenues was offset by higher labor costs in Venezuela. This resulted in an operating margin decline of 180 basis points to 14.9%. Our EBITDA in Latin Centro grew 4% to 1.6 billion Mexican pesos compared with the second quarter of 2010. Depreciation and amortization expenses in the region grew mainly as a result of our continued investment in the marketplace to increase our cooler coverage and reinforce our returnable base. In summary, our Latin Centro division delivered positive results for the quarter. The strong performance of our portfolio beverages across our Colombian and Central American franchise territories compensated for a high single-digit volume decline in Venezuela, underscoring the benefits of a geographically balanced portfolio. However, we continue to face several challenges in the region, from an increased competitive environment in Colombia to the continued higher labor cost in Venezuela. As previously noted, our operators remain focused on adapting our business to these conditions and to minimizing their impact on our profitability. For example, in Colombia, we are analyzing different strategies from reinforcing our returnable base to increasing the availability of more affordable products to developing alternatives that will attract consumers who are normally accustomed to drink tap water and homemade fruit beverages. Now, let's talk about our Mercosur division. In the second quarter of 2011, our Mercosur division's total revenues grew 18% to 8.4 billion Mexican pesos. Excluding beer, which accounted for 850 million Mexican pesos, our total revenues reached 7.6 billion Mexican pesos. On a currency neutral basis, our Mercosur division's revenues grew 16%. Volume growth in our Mercosur division was up 4% in the second quarter of 2011. Our Brazilian operations volumes rose 2%, successfully building on the significant volume growth we recorded in the second quarter of 2010. This growth was mainly driven by the strong performance of our steel beverage platform, which grew close to 30%, supported by the Sucos del Valle line of beverages, the Material T portfolio, and Power our isotonic brand. In Argentina, our volumes grew 9% in the second quarter of 2011. The solid performance of our sparkling beverage portfolio was mainly driven by brand Coca-Cola in multi-serve presentations and Crush, our flavored sparkling beverage brand. The steel beverage category recorded considerable growth mainly due to the strong performance of Cepita, our juice brand, and the innovative product we introduced over the past several months, including Hi-C, the juice brand, and Hugo, our new juice dairy product. With regard to our profitability, our Mercosur division's gross profit increased 17% to 3.5 billion Mexican pesos. Increased cost of high fructose considered in Argentina and PET resin across the division was partially offset by the appreciation of the Brazilian real as applied to our US dollar denominated raw material cost. Our gross margin decreased 40 basis points to 41% for the second quarter of 2011. Our operating income grew 18% to 1.1 billion Mexican pesos. Operating leverage achieved through higher revenues across the division and more target marketing investment compensated for gross margin pressures and higher labor costs through our franchise territories. As a result, operating margin remained flat at 12.5% in the second quarter. Our EBITDA grew 25% to 1.3 billion Mexican pesos. Depreciation and amortization expenses in the region grew mainly as a result of the increased production capacity we have installed in Brazil over the past several months, and our continued investment in the marketplace to increase our cooler coverage and reinforce our returnable base across the region. In summary, our Mercosur division delivered positive results in the second quarter of 2011. In Brazil, our broad steel beverage platform continues to perform strongly, especially the Sucos del Valle line of products. Consumer preference for this brand of beverages is driving higher demand. Moreover, our strategy of increasing the availability of returnable presentations for brand Coca-Cola for our consumers has proven successful. During the quarter, we extended these returnable offerings to the Coca-Cola Zero and Fanta brands. Furthermore, the Schweppes sparkling beverage line has gained mass popularity among adult consumers, providing important incremental volume growth in the flavored sparkling beverage category. Our prospects for future growth in Brazil remain positive, despite the recent slowdown in consumption we have seen due to higher interest rates implemented by the government to moderate inflation growth. In Argentina, we continue to reinforce our efforts to broaden our product portfolio, focusing on developing new products and categories and leveraging prevailing consumer momentum in the country. To target different consumption occasions during the quarter, we launched an orange beverage under the Hi-C brand with outstanding results, and over the past several months, we started to participate in the juice dairy segment in Argentina through Hugo and its innovative product. Going forward, in our Mercosur division, we see ample opportunities to continue developing our portfolio to address our consumers' present and future needs. Now let me walk you through our financial performance for the quarter. In the second quarter, our operations produced strong results, delivering double-digit top and bottom line growth. Despite the increased volatility we have experienced in some of our key raw materials, particularly PET resin, our operators have adapted our business to those conditions and sustained our company's profitability. As of June 30, 2011, we had a cash balance of 16.7 billion Mexican pesos, an increase of 4.2 billion Mexican pesos compared with year-end 2010. This increase was mainly the result of the debt we issued and the cash we generated in the first half of 2011, net of the dividend payment we made in April in the amount of 4.4 billion pesos. As of June 30, 2011, our net debt to EBITDA coverage ratio was 0.2 times and our EBITDA to net interest coverage ratio was more than 16 times. As you know, at the end of last month, we announced a merger agreement with the major controlling shareholders of Grupo Tampico to integrate the beverage division into Coca-Cola FEMSA. Grupo Tampico beverage division is the fifth largest Coca-Cola bottler in Mexico, with operations in the northeast part of the country. This franchise, the oldest in the Mexican Coca-Cola bottling system, is expected to sell 154 million unit cases of beverages during this year. This transaction is subject to the completion of a confirmatory legal, financial, and operating due diligence process, on which we are advancing as planned. We expect to successfully close this merger agreement during September and start consolidating Grupo Tampico's beverage division results into Coca-Cola FEMSA as of the fourth quarter of 2011. As we have emphasized in the past, we remain committed to pursuing opportunities in the beverage industry that will maximize our shareholders' value. This transaction exemplifies that commitment. In conclusion, our operations delivered positive results for the quarter. We believe that our geographically diversified sources of cash flow generation represent a competitive advantage that will allow us to continue investing in our industry future growth and enhance our leadership position within our markets. We are proud to manage a wide and wonderful portfolio of brands in one of the best markets in the beverage industry. As we enter the second half of the year, together with our partner, the Coca-Cola Company, we will celebrate the 125th anniversary of brand Coca-Cola. As we commemorate this event, we feel even stronger and more enthusiastic about our merger with Grupo Tampico's beverage division. We are confident that our combined operating capabilities to manage our business under challenging conditions will enable us to continue outperforming our industry and delivering increased value for all of our shareholders. Thank you for your continued trust and support, and now I would like to open the call for any questions that you may have.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star followed by one on your phone. If your question has been answered or you would like to withdraw your question, press star followed by two. Due to the large volume of participants, we ask that questioners limit themselves to one question. You may re-enter the queue after your initial question has been taken. Please press star one to begin. The first question comes from the line of Lauren Torres from HSBC. Please proceed.
Good morning, Hector. My question is on commodity costs. We're obviously hearing from a number of beverage companies already this earnings season that certain costs are trending a bit higher than initially expected. In your second quarter, we did see some gross margin contraction, but you were able to actually keep operating margin flat. So just curious, somewhat a short-term question or a short-sighted question, but as we think about the second half of the year, Do you expect continued pressure on the gross margin line? But with that said, do you think there still are offsets, meaning that maybe you could take more pricing or there's other savings flowing through that will help you to keep your operating margin flat or maybe even grow for the year? Just how do you generally think about that?
Good morning, Lauren. I think that in order to appropriately answer that question, we have, even though commodity prices are kind of following international prices, we have different environments within the different countries. Sometimes because tariff regulations, etc. No? Let me start with Mexico, and then I'll give you a general sense of the trends that we are seeing for the second half. In Mexico, I see more stable sweetener cost, and it's not necessarily the same in some countries like Venezuela, where we have a lot of scarcity and restrictions in importing some of these products. So Venezuela, we see still some pressure on sugar prices. And Brazil, as you know, which is a very large market for us, it's totally following what the international prices are in that country. Mexico with higher prices than Brazil, but I see stable prices and therefore not much pressure in general. In all of the different countries, PET is really the big question, because we have received a lot of pressure increases in prices of that resin in dollar terms. But then here's the tricky part of your question: is depending on how the foreign exchange behaves in each country going forward, that's the extent of the suffering that we'll have on PET. Let me give you an example. If we use for this quarter, just for this quarter, on a consolidated base, PET prices have grown in general in dollar terms. If we have stayed with normalized exchange rate, PET prices would have impacted our numbers somewhere around $14 to $15 million. But approximately half of that effect was offset because the Mexican peso appreciated versus last year, the Brazilian real appreciated before when we compared that versus last year, and the same with the Colombian peso. So it's a long answer, but my perspective for the second quarter is that we will continue to have some pressure on dollar terms on PET, and the exchange rate would play an important role there. Second, sugar prices, I don't see, I see stability in that market on those prices on the second half. And I think that is very important that we continue focus on improving the operating expenses line, and we have commented we do for many quarters now that has been the focus of a lot of attention on Coca-Cola FEMSA in the last two or three quarters. No?
And if I could just follow up on that then, as far as offsets are concerned, is your pricing plans or are your pricing plans more or less in place, or there's further opportunities, do you think, in the second half?
In general, you're right, that's an important element here also. In general, we continue with this idea that at least we should have increases with inflation in most of our territories. There has been some examples where we advanced further than inflation in some occasions. There have been some examples where, for example, in Mexico this quarter, with the growth of brand Coca-Cola and with the growth of single serves, you have a positive effect of the mix. That happened also in Argentina, where we saw an important price increase, mainly related to mix. But in general, I'll see that most of our pricing plans are in place. The only question mark we have here, Lorin, is Venezuela. I don't know if everyone is aware, but yesterday there was a new regulation passed that in theory will focus on trying to, exercise some price control in the industry, in general in the country, and commerce. It's not clear still the extent of that or which parts will enter with which degree of control, but Venezuela is always a question mark on that front. No? But in general, the rest of the other eight countries, we are very well in our plans with respect to pricing.
The next question comes from the line of Alan Alanis from J.P. Morgan. Please proceed.
Thank you. Hi, Hector. Congratulations. Good quarter. My question has to do with Mercosur. The volume have been kind of weak in Brazil in the first half, I think 2.5 growth. We're seeing, as you mentioned, pricing, pretty strong pricing across the board. A couple of questions there. What's the outlook that you see in terms of volumes, in particularly in Brazil, as you get tougher comps in the second half? And if you could comment on the market shares, not only in Brazil but across the region. The Coca-Cola company mentioned that the Coke system has been gaining market share, particularly in Mexico and Brazil. Any color that you can give us on market share would be appreciated. And finally, just any comment that you can give on the announcement of Pepsi and consolidating its bottler in Mexico into a single operations with the JV of Polar and Geusa. So those would be the three questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Alan. Good morning. Let me start with Brazil. I think that in general, Brazil, I think that you are right in pointing out that the comps versus last year are very tough. If I remember correctly, last year, the second quarter, we grew around 13%. Then we have a third quarter that also grew double-digit and a fourth quarter that was in the single-digit range, but it was an important growth. So the comparison is tough. But still, my feeling is the following in this environment. I think that we have, doing this similar of the movie, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, no? The good part of on Brazil is that the macroeconomic environment and all the indications you see there are very, very positive. You have a tremendous chunk of the population moving from lower socioeconomic levels to the middle or low middle class segment, and that obviously brings a lot of consumers with more disposable income in their pockets. But I think that's very good news. And it has been there. The amount of some estimates that we have is that in the last 10 years, we have around 60 million people moving from very low socioeconomic levels to, you know, a more interesting level, closer to middle class. And 60 million people is a country, no? At the end of the day, it's a very large number. So I think that's the good part of the story. The bad part in Brazil is that also has created a lot of, activity in the country that has pushed inflation importantly. The government is trying to control inflation. They have increased rates importantly. You can speak about overheating in the economy in a sense. And you have a consumer that has borrowed a lot of resources for buying a car or buying a TV or buying electrodomestic equipment or whatever. And part of the restrictions that the government is putting in addition to high interest rates, it's a tougher restriction on limits on what they have to pay on credit cards and all of that, that we believe that is causing our consumer to dedicate part of those resources to repay these loans, and not so much to our products. I my guess, and I don't have information here, and I'd love to have it, but I think that this is more of a general trend for consumer good companies in Mexico. Obviously, I'd like to see how Amber reports later on. The ugly part of the picture is that when we start speaking about the government continue with these social programs and then looking for taxes, no? And as we see at the first part of the quarter, we suffer a price, a tax increase in our industry that basically we have to increase prices to the consumer around 4 or 5%, basically to stay neutral for us, no, in terms of the taxes that were increased. So in general, that's the comment that I wanted to make. We feel positive in the future in Brazil. There might be some weather-related problems that we face in the past, but we feel positive about the growth prospects. A little bit cautious with this consumer sentiment about how they are behaving with their indebtedness, and obviously worried a little bit with the tax situation in the country. No, in Mexico, turning to the announcement of PepsiCola, Polar, and Geusa, I think that it's obviously a very interesting and clever move. We compete with Polar in Venezuela. It's a very tough competitor. Geusa is very tough in the territories. We fight with them in the streets. And I think that it's an interesting move for Pepsi. I think that we will have a combination of two very good operators in the Pepsi system now combined here in Mexico for the whole country, no? I think that I don't know if I've missed one question from you, Alan, or if I answer anything, everything now.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star 1. And your next question comes from the line of Bob Ford from Merrill Lynch. Please proceed.
Hey, thank you. Good morning, everybody, and congratulations on the quarter, Hector. My question had to do with package mix, and I was wondering if you could remind us a little bit of your returnable, non-returnable mix in the major markets, and if you could give us a sense of how much of the incremental volumes came from returnable packaging. And when you look at maybe some of the mitigation strategies when it comes to PET, in addition to maybe returnables, what can you do in terms of I don't know, greater use of recycled PET or further lightweighting of packages and caps?
It's an interesting question. Obviously, innovation on all lightweighting and all the way from the PET bottles and caps and labels and all of that, it's always top of mind in our technical people. Obviously, working very closely and sometimes, from a commercial point of view and from a financial point of view of the company, painstakingly slow because you have to go through a lot of approvals in terms of the quality control, but obviously it's very important that we support and those initiatives to be sure that we don't have any quality issues with respect to the carbonation of the products and all of that. And the other element which has been very important and we have stressed that for many quarters also, is the returnability issue. We have, and more or less in general, if I remember correctly, Brazil should be around 17% of the mix is returnable. Mexico is a little more than that, it's closer to the 30-31%, and in both cases increasing. Remember that Brazil, a big portion of the volume that was, the growth in volume that we saw the last 12 months was coming from the push for returnability. Remember that also, as we maintain higher prices of our product compared to our competitors, having an affordable, returnable product not only works from the point of view of isolating the effects of PET increases, but also from the point of view of competing without having to adjust our pricing of our one-way products. In other words, putting a returnable product very close to the to the prices of the one-way trucks of our competitors. In fact, because the strategy in Brazil has been so successful that we are now doing Return Oil, Coca-Cola Zero, and Fanta, which honestly sometimes in the flavor categories where you don't have as strong brand preference as brand Coca-Cola, it's a little bit tougher and riskier to move into returnable flavor drinks because obviously the investment in the bottles and cases is large. So we feel confident that because of the success that we have seen in Brazil with returnable products, that we can increase that 17% to perhaps, you know, the mid-20s in returnable. But it helps us mitigating the effect of PET and also on the competitive front, on the pricing front.
And then, Hector, just with respect to recycling, several years ago, I think it was you and the Coca-Cola company established, you know, a fairly important recycling facility in Mexico, and I was curious if, you know, if that's a dimension that can help ease some of the pressures as well or not.
Yes, you're right. I forgot that part of the question. Yes, we have a very important recycling center near Mexico City. It's a partnership between the Coca-Cola company, Alta, which is one of the suppliers, the main suppliers we have for PET bottles in our operations, and Coke-Friends. That facility is every day a little bit more efficient. It started for 2 or 3 years within a learning curve where we were basically having recycled PET that was not very competitive with the new PET, but now it's very good for us because we are using, if I remember correctly, technically I believe it, we are allowed to use around 25% to 30% of every bottle we can use recycled PET, which that index has been increased from 5-10% a few years ago. So it's an important source for us of savings in the PET front. That plant has been it is an important benchmark for the world in terms of efficiency. And as a matter of fact, the Coca-Cola company is looking at replicating some of that something similar to that with other bottles around the world.
And then, Hector, just we're backing out that about a third of the incremental volumes is coming from returnable packaging. I wasn't sure if we're in the ballpark or not. And then if you could just touch on the relative cost of recycled PET versus, you know, virgin resin, please.
Let me give you the figures that I have in the top of my mind right now. Around half of the additional volume in Mexico is coming from returnable products, the additional volume, and the rest is coming from obviously one way. No? But it's an important element here in our strategies. I don't remember exactly that numbers for the rest of the country as well, but I certainly ask Jose to follow up with that question.
And then just lastly on the cost savings with the use of recycled PET, is it significant?
Right now, it's very little, but it's important as a source of having an additional supplier and not relying only on the few hands of the resin producers. It's very little, but it's improving. And we started, as I said at the beginning, with a higher cost than the virgin PET. At the very beginning, but as we have improved that efficiency and the knowledge of that, I'd say that we are slightly below the cost of PET. But one issue that we should not lose sight here, Bob, is for us, very importantly, in addition to the diversification of our sourcing of PET, is the sustainability issue. I think that if we haven't had that plant in Mexico for many years now, we probably would have had some either taxes or some extra cost embedded in our cost structure because of issues of production and sustainability.
No, that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Antonio Gonzalez from Credit Suisse. Please proceed.
Hi, good morning, Hector. Thanks for taking my question. I wanted to ask first on Mexico. I mean, year to date, you've seen a very strong growth, both in terms of top line as well as in terms of operating profit. And I think you've emphasized that the adjustments in your commercial strategy have been quite important in driving this top line and EBIT growth. But I wanted to ask if you think that looking more into 2012, more with probably a multi-year horizon, do you think some of this growth will carry over into the next years? And are you now more bullish with respect to the longer term, maybe top line and EBIT equation for Mexico? Do you think this is an impact that will be mostly concentrated in this particular year?
Antonio, I think that in general, we feel very, very confident that the commercial model that we have implemented has helped us to take Coca-Cola Mexico operations to the ahead of the curve on what we call to the next level, which is where we are now. I think that these changes are here to stay. But one issue that is very important is, with the number of SKUs that we are selling and number of categories that we are now serving, it's impossible to serve the market if we don't have these commercial models in place. The big investment that we have done in technology, in information systems, in training our people, and changing compensation variables for our sales force, it's just an adjustment that is necessary when you handle such a large portfolio of products. So first of all, that's a very important element. And second, going into the future, I think that because of that, those changes that we have implemented in our commercial practices, I think that will carry over to other years. So yes, I'm a little more bullish on the future in the top line growth. With respect to the bottom line of the P&L, I think that obviously, that additional volume and the growth that we are experiencing would trickle down to the bottom of V&L, obviously subject to effects with cost on some raw materials, sweetener, TD variables. I feel more confident now, as I have expressed from the last three or four quarters, that a lot of our operating expenses are much more under control and on a more stable basis that will help us also to continue with this trend of increasing the bottom line of our P&L.
Thank you, and that's very helpful. And secondly, if I may, in your prepared remarks, you mentioned the market share gains that you're seeing in Powerade, and I think that even anecdotally, we're seeing a lot more advertising and marketing for the brand across the region. So I just wanted to see if you can give us some more color on what have you changed in the brand that you think was necessary to see these better results, and maybe if you can share with us a little bit what's the outlook that you expect for the evolution of this brand in the next two or three quarters.
Yes, I think that things that are power. Let me start first saying that power is an important alternative because we were and we are still behind, very far behind our main competitor, which is Gatorade. Right? I think that we have gained important market share from basically not being present. We have market shares closer to 30% in Mexico, which is very, very important. And again, as I have stressed in the past, especially when you think that our competitor derives a lot of the profitability from that product. The homework that we have in Powerade is, and it's related to your question, we have invested heavily in innovation in the formulation. And you have seen the advertisement with these ions that are included in the formula that are including healthy weather and sport drink. And very importantly, the investment behind hot fuel, which we didn't have before. So to be very honest, our formula was not top-notch a few years ago. We invested after the Cucino Jugos del Valle in hot fuel facilities. We have continued to invest in hot fuel lines within our facilities. We continue to invest in those lines because obviously it's also used for the juice products. And I think that has been a key element in having a formula that can be competitive versus Gatorade. The homework going forward is that also to help foster this volume growth, there is a lot of marketing activity behind this, and you see a lot of sponsoring of sports and especially World Cup and things like that. So you have empowered a case where you are seeing a very important top line growth and a good pricing because we have stopped discounting versus a competitor and we have a better formula, but we're still spending big bucks on marketing. And the bottom line on Power, when you look at that alone, it's good, but it's not as good as we would like to see it. I think that we still have to benefit going forward and in the future of a better margin on those products as we start, having a little bit better pricing and less marketing expenditures or promotional activity. No?
Thank you very much, Hector.
The next question comes from the line of Alan Alinas from JP Morgan. Please proceed.
Hi, Hector. Thank you for taking my follow-up. Just a quick question regarding the departure of Miguel Ángel Peirano. What are your views and who's going to replace him as the CEO of Mercosur?
The views is Miguel Ángel obviously was here in our company working for 14 years. We are very thankful for all this. It's certainly a key element in all the development of our company, and we will miss him. He was offered a very good opportunity to become CEO of Andina. So certainly the case where someone in the organization suffered a very good position, it's almost impossible to stop that, no? And that's part of the thing that happens when you are successful and you have a good talented team of professionals. We feel that we have a very strong bench inside. We actually have, because this has been very recently, well, basically, I believe announced Wednesday or Thursday of last week, we are having internal meetings tomorrow. We had a board meeting a couple of days ago where the organization was basically approved. And the idea is that after the internal meeting that we have tomorrow, we will announce how the organization is going to look like. So we need to wait for that, and because obviously we haven't communicated internally anything yet. No?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Celso Sanchez from Citi. Please proceed.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. I just wanted to follow up a little bit on the packaging question from before and then ask a separate one. But the returnability in Brazil, we understand from that one of the major competitors is starting with little depósitos in some of the supermarkets to help drive the concept of returnability even in supermarkets. Can you update us on where you are in that process? Are you part of that development, or are you thinking of doing that as well? And I'm thinking, of course, of the success that you had in Argentina with that. So if you could address that, please.
Good morning, Celso. I know that most of our efforts is in the traditional channel, and I'm not aware if there's a specific food for supermarkets. Let me check in that specific question, but and we'll come back to you. But most of our effort has been empezó con panaderías, the traditional channel, no, to where we usually push a lot with the return on. It also serves a lot as a differentiator between supermarkets and the traditional channel, as we have a presentation that is very well dedicated for traditional channel. But let me check with our operators over there and I'll answer to you.
Right.
There is a specific push for supermarkets. No?
Great, thank you. And if I could just ask, with respect to Mexico, I think we're all fairly impressed by the success of the results there, and touching on some of the questions from before, the commercial model that's been rolled out seems to have played a big part of that. Can you update us and remind us of the status of the GBSM model in the different countries? Kind of where is it now, fully rolled out versus just beginning, or if it hasn't started yet, when it might start, country by country, please?
Yes, in general, we did, it might sound strange, but we did a big push in Brazil, and we did basically like a big bang and moved to 100% of our GBC in Brazil. So Brazil is 100%. Mexico is, I'd say, around 3/4, so we still need to roll out part of the Mexican territories, even though a lot of the initial thought process and development of this model was done in Mexico. So we are still some areas to cover in Mexico. Markets like Colombia, we are around 25%, so we still need have some homework to do that. It has to do also with the speed of that process, even though it's obviously has been successful in the market where we have implemented. It has to do with a lot of the training that is needed, adapting and changing the compensation scheme for the sellers, which is obviously a process that is tough because you have to negotiate with unions, and also goes hand in hand with the implementation of systems. And as you probably recall, we have expressed that a lot of the platform that we have with SAP a few years ago, a couple of years ago, we received news from SAP that system was not going to be maintained in the future, and we needed to change to the new version of SAP. So this GBC is intertwined with a little bit with the process of rolling over the new SAP system in our operations. That's why it's something that is difficult to just do a big bang as we did in Brazil. But that's more or less the status of where we are.
And with respect to timing of SAP and therefore the GBC rollout, is this a 2012 event we should think about for Argentina and Central America, or beyond that?
Yes, we should finish that by 2012.
Okay, that's the SAP or the GBC as well?
No, the two of them are going together. As we redesign the new platform for SAP, we are incorporating all this GBC thing together, no? So it's going at the same time.
Great. Thank you, Phil.
The next question comes from the line of Carlos Laboy from Credit Suisse. Please proceed.
Good morning, everyone. Hector, can you please expand on the Powerade comments you made to my colleague Antonio Gonzalez? You said that you see room for improvement in marketing of Powerade. What do you think can be better for Powerade to take more share, or there's price gaps that you think need to be closed there? And obviously, Gatorade is very important for the profitability of the Pepsi system here in Mexico, you mentioned, but what does Powerade's profitability look like for you? Is it higher? Is it equal? Is it lower than brand Coke? How do you see that improving?
Good morning, Carlos. Right now, if we look at the profitability of brand power, it's much lower than brand Coca-Cola, especially, as I mentioned, because of the high marketing expenses that we have been investing. We believe that it's important that we continue to invest those marketing funds on the brand until we get a better market position. But just to give you an idea, during some quarters last year when we had the World Cup, marketing expense, including all the expenses related to the World Cup and the share that we have to pay here in Mexico from that, were closer to around 55-60% of revenues, when usually we go to 3-4%, no? So that's just to give you a sense of the high marketing investment that has been behind the brand. There is an important dialogue going on with all the different bottlers in Mexico and the Coca-Cola Company, and this is one product that is under this 50-50 modern umbrella together with the Coca-Cola Company. But I think that little by little, as we improve volume, obviously that number looks very impressive because the top line was, we needed to grow the top line at the end of the day. So it's not only an issue of the denominator, but also the numerator. No? My objective is that at some point in time it will reach similar levels to brand Coca-Cola, but we are not there yet.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ben.
I would now like to send the call over to Hector.
Okay, thank you for the interest in our company, and obviously Jose and his team are available to answer the remaining questions that you might have. Thank you.
This conference, thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect. Have a great day.